We are off to a rousing start, are we not? Hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday. Not quite as oppressive as it's been out there as we listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. A busy morning it's been, especially for me. Feels like it ought to be in the middle of the afternoon, but it's only noon. But I'm looking forward to this because I'm going to do two very interesting interviews during the course of the hour today. We're going to talk first with our friends from the Spinning Tree Theater. They are doing a show called Ladies' Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, featuring Billie Holiday. Well, no, not Billie Holiday in person, Billie Holiday in dramatic form.
Absolutely.
As well. Nedra Dixon is with us. She plays the role of Billie Holiday. She has performed at other theaters around the area. She has directed at the Unicorn. You've directed other places other than the Unicorn?
At the Coterie as well.
At the Coterie as well.
Yeah, Gardens at the Unicorn and Once on This Island at the Coterie.
Sure.
And just blown away that I get to bring life and breath to this iconic figure of jazz and music, Billie Holiday.
A lot of pressure, these Billie Holiday.
It is, but I've got an incredible spirit guide, and Andrew Parker as my director, and Gary Green as the musical director, and it's actually been quite an Olympic event rehearsing this.
Andrew Parker is with us as well. He's the director, and he's the managing director over at Spinning Tree Theater. They are producing the show.
That's right.
Billie Holiday, a favorite of yours, perhaps?
A favorite of mine, and like Nikki said, we're looking at the Olympics in the world, and we're looking at the Olympics on the Spinning Tree stage as she portrays this incredible woman and artist.
Does she indeed get gold?
Yes. I think audiences will find it, yes. They will
Let's
get
hope.
Gold.
Let's yes. hope.
Could you tell us some of the background of this story? Was it written as a tribute to Billie Holiday?
It was. It is an imagined evening that takes place. The playwright Lainey Robertson had a friend who saw Billie toward the end of her career at this dive bar in Philadelphia, a city where so much drama happened to Billie in her life. And it's about 4 months before her death, this imagined evening where she plays at this club. You know, she wasn't allowed to play in New York City at the end of her career because they revoked her cabaret card. So here she is back in Philly. You know, it's not the most beautiful place. It's not full, but she's there to sing her heart out and give lots of stories that are both comical and tragic, and oftentimes a mix of the two. So we're not only getting that canon of Billie Holiday classic artful songs, but we're also getting to know the woman.
Sure. Am I remembering this correctly? She spent a lot of her time in Paris?
I don't know that fact, but I know that, she toured all across the country with many big band names, Artie Shaw and Benny Goodman and Count Basie. So she had a prolific career here in the States. She very well may have spent some time abroad, as many jazz performers did. I don't think she spent a huge time. Josephine Baker, of course, was
maybe that's who I'm thinking of. Just
lived in Paris for most of her life and became a constant performer there. But Billie's career was here primarily. And she was quite a huge name and star in New York City, played, you know, at the time, at the height of her career and the height of many performers in that jazz era career, there were dozens and dozens of clubs in New York City where people could see fabulous performers, and she was very much of that scene, Cafe Society and many clubs up in Harlem. But when she was arrested for, we know that Billie Holiday had many personal issues. She was a drug addict, she was an alcoholic, and she was arrested a few times, but for drug possession and put in prison, not just jail, but spent time mm-hmm. in prison. And as a result of that, New York State revoked this cabaret card, which wasn't really designed for performers, but it was designed for club owners and who served liquor. But they extended this card, this work card, to performers in New York, and it probably had to do with taxation and fees and all being able to collect more money for the state. And after a prison stint, the state revoked her license. And although she was, some might label her as a tragic icon, I don't. I don't think she lived her life as a tragic figure who went, oh, mea culpa, you know, oh, poor me, poor me. She had a life that she chose to live that in which she made choices that others may not have made, and, of course, choices that had a great impact on her physical being, her emotional well-being, her professional well-being. All of her life was impacted by her choices, but she was a woman who was able to still delve into her art. She was truly gifted with the ability to bring a song to life and make it palatable and visible and tactile, really, for a viewing or listening audience. People loved her. Colleagues loved her. She was so respected in what her art was. And so she loved music. She loved to sing. Her passion was to sing. And she says that music was, that singing was the best part of living for her. So I don't think mm-hmm. she focused on the bad stuff that was a part of her life. She lived her life. She survived as best mm-hmm. that she could throughout her life. But I think the most, if there was a tragic thing that happened, it was the revoking of her license, which just cut her ability to make a living in her home, in her beloved city.
Usually you would want a prisoner to be rehabilitated, which means a career.
Absolutely.
Working, and by denying her that, they really kind of impeded their own goal.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think probably shortened her life even.
Absolutely.
Because she lived to sing. And although she was able to go out of town and play other places, it still, to her, wasn't like being in New York and at home and in her setting. Yeah. So that's the tragedy, I think.
And that's a difficult life, too, isn't it? Always traveling and singing.
Oh, absolutely.
It's gotta be difficult.
As an artist who has done that, you know, for very much of my career, mm-hmm. it isn't an easy life, too. You don't have a, you have a home base someplace, of course. Of course, mine was New York, but if you're on the road a lot, then you hopefully have a good relationship with the people that you're traveling with, because they become your family. They become who you depend on as your support system. And she did have a good support system and a good relationship with people that she worked with and toured with, thank goodness. Also, I won't say tragically, but ironically, in her travels, because a lot of her travels were in the South, with bands, and she traveled with white bands, mm-hmm. and she's as a black performer. And at that time, often in the South, she couldn't be in the same hotel.
Sure, yeah, remind people what
restaurant.
Time era that would
We're
have been.
We're talking the 40s and mm-hmm. the 30s, 40s, and so she would sometimes have to wait in the bus to mm-hmm. for her numbers to go on to sing, because she's not allowed in the venue, or people, the club owners or the new owners' perception and perspective was that people wouldn't want a black person really intermingling with the rest of the white performers right. on stage. So she would have to wait until it was time for her number to go sing
right.
on stage. Or she was, you know, if they were out of town and staying overnight, oftentimes she might have to sleep in a bus,
mm-hmm.
or somebody have to find another hotel across town in the other side of town for her to reside, or if they were dining. Oftentimes she wasn't allowed to dine in the front dining room of restaurants. We get a bit of a glimpse of something that happens to her in that respect in the show, where she has to eat in the kitchen of a restaurant, but the rest of the band does too, in support of her. So you, when you're traveling, you do develop your family on the road, hopefully, when you're away from home. Because it is difficult to be to be out
there. It has to be.
It is.
And very much so. Remind people of some of the songs that made her famous. And, you know, concentrate on the ones that you sing in the show.
Well, I sing about 12 of them in this show, and some of the iconic ones are, of course, Strange Fruit and God Bless the Child. What a Little Moonlight Can Do. But then she does, there are some other ones that just are fantastic.
Something you might not know as
well. When a Woman Loves a Man, yes. Mm. And she does a couple of Bessie Smith. She loved Bessie Smith. So you hear a couple of her versions of Bessie Smith numbers. And then there are some that will leave you breathless. I've listened to her and listened to her and listened to her for months now. And every time I put my earphones on and I'm studying the pieces that I'm bringing to life in the show, I end up really having to wipe away tears listening to her sing. Mm-hmm. Don't Explain, and Deep Song.
Deep Song, yeah.
They will leave you just crying.
These are really art songs. I mean, these are many of them poems that were set to music, and she sort of envied Bessie Smith's big sound. You know, we're never artists happy with what we have, are we?
Right,
we're always looking, I wish I had that. She wanted Louis Armstrong's style and feeling and Bessie Smith's big sound, but she didn't have a big sound. Mm-hmm. You know, Billie had a small range, and it was a smaller voice, but she was a song interpreter. And we kind of talked about that in rehearsal. What would happen if someone like that would be on American Idol today? Would people even understand the artistry of that? Or would they be completely blown away by it? Because for some of the songs, like God Bless the Child and Strange Fruit, the club owners would have the lights dimmed of the club, and they wouldn't allow the cocktail waitresses to serve or make any noise. And Billie liked to have that pin spot right on her face. And she just held the audience in the palm of her hand. But it wasn't vocal pyrotechnics. It wasn't, you know, all this riffing that the kids do today, that much of it is attached to nothing. If she felt like she couldn't sing it from a deep, authentic place, she wouldn't sing it.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about it at Alderson Prison in West Virginia. The women wanted her to sing. She got to prison, and a lot of the women had her records. They had her LPs. "You got to sing for us, Billie." She said, "Have you ever heard a dead person sing?"
Oh,
yeah.
I'm not alive.
That's probably
now.
I can't
sing because I'm not feeling it.
That's probably the way she felt.
There was an artistic integrity there that you can't help but to respect. And never through this evening, I think, do you really feel sorry for the woman and the artist, because she stood by that.
Yeah.
Well, Nedra, you said earlier you listened to her for many, many hours.
Months and months and months. I had to. It's
to get into her particular style, which may or may not be different than yours.
Absolutely, because I'm not doing an impression. It's not a stand-up moment. Okay, she's, you know, let me put on my Billie Holiday. I'm having to breathe truth and life into this figure, and I have to make her as true as I can as the artist that has her spirit flow through me. So, yeah, I've had to do an immense amount of research, both on her life and career, but also I've been listening and watching. There's not a whole lot of her on film to watch, but there are some things. But to watch her physicality, I've listened to get where her placement is in her her lilt. She has a lilt and kind of a almost cry in her singing that's definitive. People know her sound when they listen to it. So I want to capture that as much as I can in my instrument. And so for me, as the artist working, I've had to think, okay, her placement's kind of forward in the face, and there's some breath running through the songs rather than it being totally ballsy and gutsy and big voice sounding like the Ethel Merman that we just heard to open the hour. And to be true to that, my work is to, as an artist, how do I do that? And how much of her can I absorb so that what's coming through me is as authentic as I can be.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, it's probably best, this between you and the director, it's probably best not to try to do an imitation.
Oh, it's not an imitation.
It might be really difficult for one thing, and I don't know, you can never be exactly.
Oh, no, you can't do, there are people who are incredible impressionists.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But our task is to give you a full-blooded, living, breathing, human Billie Holiday,
mm-hmm.
and not Nedra Dixon, the impressionist.
It's not a documentary. It's a piece of art that the playwright Lainey Robertson wrote. So you have this sort of meeting of three artists when you come to witness the show. You have Billie Holiday, the artist. You have the interpretation of Billie Holiday through the playwright, the artist Lainey Robertson. And then you have the interpretation of the artist on stage, Nedra Dixon.
Sure.
And that's one of the things I love about the piece, is that you have kind of this dual in awe-ness and affinity for all of that, especially you're just in awe of the art of Billie Holiday, and then this woman who is on stage portraying her. How are they both doing what they're doing? Incredible.
I'm just curious, did the writer, the playwright, happen to know her? Or
I don't believe so.
How did the knowledge of the stories that she would have told on stage, how could that have come about?
Well, there are many biographies, mm-hmm. many, many biographies, and an autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote with William Dufty, was his name, in collaboration with, and there are many varying stories. Facts are questioned, and varying accounts. Well, that couldn't have happened, or she couldn't have been this age, and she was totally wrong about that fact that she stated. But then, how do you argue with someone's autobiography?
That's right. Yeah.
Her autobiography is what she knows and remembers as her life and how she views it. So you can't argue with that. So there is a lot of material to pull from and a lot of stories, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Mr. Robertson, I don't know what his process was in developing the piece, but there is material that he had resources.
That's right.
Yeah,
and there are many colleagues, too. I mean, there are still people living who were also performers and musicians that he may have interviewed, who knew and worked with her and respected her highly.
You have a musical director. Was there any need to change any arrangements? Probably not. I would think you'd be close enough to her.
Lainey Robertson, the original musical director I knew. We worked together, Danny Holgate and I. And I think, I don't know what his process was when he put together the musical side of it, but I'm sure his arrangements have been pretty true to recordings that I've listened to. So I'm sure that he didn't veer far off the course.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't taken anything and stylistically changed it to fit Nedra Dixon, the performer, doing Billie Holiday.
And what about the costuming, Andy? Yeah.
The costuming, Mary Traylor, the wonderful Kansas City-based designer, designed Nedra's beautiful dress, which we just got to see her in last night. Just stunning.
It is stunning. I have to say so myself, even though I get to wear it.
Yeah, she looks amazing.
So
and she has the
beautiful
gardenia. in her hair that Billy was known for.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So it's just it's just an evening that works so well, and you can view it on many levels. For people that love musicals, mm-hmm. it can be a musical. There's so much singing in it, and even underscoring. Gary Green and on piano, and Julie Danielson on bass. They're playing along while she's telling some of these stories. If you like drama. It's a drama. I mean, she goes there, and it's deep. If you like comedy, there's a lot of comedy in the show. So we've been trying to just sculpt each area, and we can't wait to have an audience this week.
Oh, yeah. Well, that will begin this Thursday. That's what I have here, the 11th.
That's right.
At 7:30 p.m., performances continue then Friday evening. Saturday evening and a matinee on Sunday.
That's right.
Are there any days? Sometimes you have two shows.
We don't have any two-show days with this because it is the Olympics.
Oh.
She might have said no to that had we tried. No, we've got performances Wednesday through Sunday, Wednesday through Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 2 o'clock.
For three consecutive weeks.
Yes, right. Runs through August 28th.
Always a matinee on Sunday and 7:30 p.m. on all the other nights at The Living Room Theater.
That's right.
1818 McGee. You've played a lot of places.
We have. I think we've played. Spinning Tree Theater operates at a variety of venues around Kansas City, and I think we've worked at six different venues.
Wow.
So we're returning to the wonderful Living Room and the Crossroads, where we last were there with a co-production of Joan Didion's The Year of Magical Thinking, starring Peggy Friesen. I think it was 4 years ago. It's good to be back.
Yeah. SpinningTreeTheater.com. Is where you go. Can they get tickets straight off of there?
They can, yeah. Central Ticket Office is handling single tickets for us this season.
Okay. The number for them is 816-235-6222. That's the central ticket number. And you can order from the website.
Correct.
SpinningTreeTheater.com. The Living Room, of course, is located at 1818 McGee. Should we encourage walk-ups, or would it be better if they met?
We already have one sold-out performance.
I noticed that.
And I think there will be more. I think this is one of those shows that people, if they don't make it, or if they procrastinate, they might be sorry, because we're going to be hearing a lot about it in the next few weeks.
I'm speaking with Nedra Dixon, who performs as Billie Holiday, and Andrew Parkhurst, the director of the show and the managing director of Spinning Tree Theater. We're talking about the show Ladies' Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, where Billie Holiday was performing towards the end of her career, you told
me? You know, Lady Day was her nickname. Like mine is Nikki, but hers, Lester Young, who played tenor sax, and he was a great friend of Billie Holiday, and he was a fantastic sax player as well, called her Lady and shortened her name from Billie Holiday to Lady Day. So that kind of stayed with her for her whole career as well. So we do know her as Lady Day. So this is Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill.
I'm guessing that it was typical of performers in that era to talk, to tell stories in between songs. Mm-hmm. You don't see that or hear that so much today. I remember when I saw The Grateful Dead, for instance, there was not one word spoken to the audience.
Really?
It was all music.
All music. Huh.
It's more of a sort of a cabaret, and it's a theatrical device for this piece, of course. So I don't know that, you know, Billie Holiday would have talked much at all throughout the evening, but this is a play. So we want to learn more about her.
And
it's
set in a small club venue. Now, I've done, personally, as a performer, I've done lots of club work, cabaret work, and it is part of the evening for the performer to become one with the audience, because they're right there. Cabaret settings, club settings are very intimate. Mm-hmm. You know, I could walk down three steps and I could sit in your lap. So I really want to get to know the performer and invite them in to be a part of this evening as much as I can, and as much as any cabaret performer does in an evening. So patter is kind of a normal thing that can happen in a small club setting. In a big, you know, and when you're in a big stadium, you can't, you're, you know, miles away from an audience. Yeah, rather than, and in a small club setting, you can also, you know, people depends upon if they don't feel too nervous, might talk back at you and, right. and direct your evening as far as how it goes. But hopefully that won't happen here.
No need for
not too much.
No need for a fourth wall.
No.
Right.
Oh, no.
As you said, you sung at cabarets before.
Yeah. So
it probably is a really good fit for you as well.
I'm hoping that, I mean, it's a wonderful, intimate evening. Mm. And so you really do get to know the lady herself, uh-huh. we hope. And she gets to know her audience, that's too. Right. So, and she gets to share with the best part of herself very closely with them. And that's a very special relationship and offering,
right.
so to speak. Yeah.
Sounds like quite a challenge for you. I'm sure you're up for
it,
though.
Nedra is, and for the three people that might not know the name Nedra Dixon, she is from Kansas City, but she had a really successful Broadway career mm-hmm. and performed all over the place, the White House and Kennedy Center and Madison Square Garden, mm-hmm. everywhere. Yeah. And she's back, and she's not only an accomplished Broadway singer, actor, dancer, but a director, and she's a jazz singer. She's in this vocal jazz trio in Kansas City called Book of Gaia with Angela Hagenbach and Pamela Baskin Watson.
Oh, wow.
So your jazz fans out there know who Nedra is, and so do your theater fans.
So come out and see.
Yeah. Nedra told us one time she was actually in a version of Hair.
I was. That was my first professional show, actually.
Wow.
Right out of college.
Yeah, we're lucky to have her. The show opens this Thursday, the 11th, at 7:30. Then Friday evening, Saturday evening, Sunday afternoon, that's at 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. The next 2 weeks, it opens and runs Wednesday through Sunday. Mm-hmm. 7:30 in the evenings, 2 o'clock p.m. for the matinees. For all 3 weeks, the show is at the Living Room Theater, 1818 McGee. The number to call for more information, the Central Ticket Office is 816-235-6222 or online at spinningtreetheater.com. Kind of put yourself in the mindset, in the era that you're hearing the great Billie Holiday sing and tell her story to you. In a cabaret setting.
Yeah.
She may be only feet from you.
And I am.
Very intimate.
And I am.
Thanks so much for coming and sharing all of this with us. Like I said, it sounds like a big challenge for you.
I am loving the challenge. I know that when I am able to look back on my journey as an artist, that this will be certainly a highlight. I cherish all the time that I cherish the fact and am grateful for the fact that Andy and Michael approached me with this offer last fall. And I'm loving every moment, and I know it is always going to be a favorite of mine.
Yeah, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Spinning Tree Theater production, Ladies Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, and that lady being Lady Day,
yeah.
Billie Holiday. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Nedra Dixon, who plays Billie Holiday, Andrew Parkhurst, who directs and is the managing director at Spinning Tree Theater. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to take a brief break. When we return, lots more to bring your way. An outdoor musical. The summer musicals aren't over yet, believe it or not. There's another one, at least one more to cover when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host, part of the Arts lineup here on KKFI, Arts Magazine Monday at noon, Arts Speak Radio Wednesday at noon, other shows sometimes. We'll have arts programming as well, all geared to keep you in touch with what's going on theatrically speaking or entertainment speaking or art speaking. Art gallery speaking, all around the community, here on the Arts Lineup, right here on KKFI. Glad to pass that your way, and remember us, come fundraising time, of course, if you're interested in those kind of things. We have still yet, all of the summer outdoor musicals are over, still yet another one comes around. The Summit Theater of Lee Summit is presenting Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And they picked a big one to do, of course,
absolutely.
With us to tell us all about it. The actor who plays Joseph and the director of the show. Brad Rackers is the director. He is with us. And Blaze Phillips plays the role of Joseph.
Yep.
He's the one that gets to wear that amazing Technicolor dream coat.
Yes. And it is amazing.
I bet it is. Yeah. The show is, of course, based on biblical stories, of course. Remind the people, if they don't remember or they're not aware, where that comes from in the Bible, the story that's in the Bible.
Right. So in the book of Genesis, we have the story of Joseph, the brother who, he has 11 other brothers, and his father sort of takes a liking to him really more than the other ones because he has an affinity for that wife. And so Joseph sort of gets kind of taken advantage of by his brothers, and they sort of decide they don't want him around anymore. And so what follows after that really is a tale of how they come to realize who they are as people after having done this kind of terrible thing to him, and sort of his kind of forgiveness of them, which comes in a very interesting way. But I think it's a great story of thinking about that idea of forgiveness and thinking about that idea of family as well.
Yeah, it's often referred to as the coat of many colors.
Absolutely.
Updated, of course, from modern times into a technicolor dream coat. People are wondering, so I'm just going to ask. Tell us about the coat. That's the feature of the show. That's what the people are waiting around to see, of course.
So we actually designed the coat ourselves. It's a brand new coat. It has some really hidden elements to it. So as people see the show, the first time you see the coat, though it's very colorful, you won't actually even know what it looks like until the big color song. So some people might know that red, blue, yellow, green, and it tells basically every color that is in the coat. And it opens up and it's huge, and it's a really neat piece of the show that, even though it gets revealed early on in the show, it really does have that kind of wow impact even within the first three songs.
Well, that's so. Tell us about some of the songs. Either one of you. Tell us about some of the songs you sing, Blaze.
Well, I start off the show with Any Dream Will Do, and it's kind of mixed in there with a prologue, and it's just like kind of me telling my story. I have another big song when I'm thrown into prison. I sing Close Every Door, and that's just kind of me or Joseph in jail trying to deal with this situation that he's in, realizing that he's probably just going to be in here for the rest of his life, and that, you know, he's realizing that his life isn't, you know, super important. He's just kind of, you know, one piece of the puzzle.
When we come to that realization, that's when we finally grow up. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
But certainly it was an untenable situation for him, brought on by what, jealousy of his brothers, things like that?
Yeah, a lot of stuff happens. Okay.
And you also have that connection there. You know, Joseph keeps getting himself into these situations where he's not doing anything wrong. He's the good guy. But he always seems to get caught in a situation where somebody else sees him as the bad guy. So in that case, before he gets thrown in jail, Potiphar, who he's been working for, his wife, has suddenly taken a liking to Joseph and won't stay away from him. And so Potiphar kind of thinks, no, I can't have you around anymore, and tosses him in jail.
You know, this is known as a big musical. Yes. How many on stage?
We have 60-plus on stage.
Wow.
Including a youth chorus of 20. So we have 20 kids who are between the first and fourth or fifth grade mostly, and then about 40-plus actors who are high school and above on the actual stage out at Legacy Amphitheater.
Yeah, what about the music? How many pieces in your orchestra?
Zero.
Zero, wow.
Acapella? We have a track. No, not
a
cappella. We bought the tracks from a company that has the tracks to perform with. It's really hard to do outdoor musicals with a full orchestra, and there's actually at the space not necessarily an orchestra pit space that would work really that well. So what we did is we really wanted it to be an amazing production, and we wanted people to get everything out of it. And for us to do that in the space and the time, we really needed those to be tracks that people could work with throughout the rehearsal process.
Oh, sure. Now, I've had many singers and performers on the show, and they all pretty much agree singing from tracks is very difficult. They'd rather have live musicians. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, I like having an orchestra. I've performed with both quite a bit, both orchestra and tracks. And, and there's a lot of room to change things around, you know, and if you mess up, you have an orchestra there so they can kind of help you along. But at the same time, it's also nice to just have it be the same thing every single time, and there's you kind of get everything in your head so that really you don't normally during like the rehearsals before show week, you don't rehearse with the orchestra. You rehearse with tracks anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's just the same thing the entire run of the show, you're more used to it by the time you get on stage.
Sounds like you've done a lot of musicals before.
I have.
What have you done?
I've done around 30.
Wow.
So I'm not going to go and name all of them. I've actually done Joseph twice before.
Really?
Yes. I've done other shows like Seussical, Into the Woods, Godspell, lots of other stuff.
Does this compare to Godspell?
Joseph, I don't know. I think Joseph tells more of a story than Godspell, and I would say that it's a lot more fun. But you know, yeah, no, Godspell and Joseph are pretty different musicals. Where Godspell is, I don't know, it's a lot more serious than Joseph is. In most cases.
Being thrown in prison sounds pretty good.
Yeah, but what follows is the 70s go-go disco number. That's what follows you going to jail. It's probably okay.
Is it necessarily a period piece then?
Oh, no. I think the great thing about the show and what I've loved about it is that it takes every period and every style. Okay. You know, Andrew Lloyd Webber really wanted to get out there this show that was like, hey, here's a country western number. Here's a French cabaret number. Here's a disco number. And they can all work within the same context of the same story. And it adds such a level to it because it's really a complete change as you watch the show. If you don't like this number, well, great. The next number's not going to be anything like that. So just wait till the next one comes along.
Is there a story behind why the people who wrote the book and the people who wrote the music did it that particular way?
You know, I don't know. I do think that there is something to be said for writing something in that style because it really hadn't been that way before. You know, people wrote musicals and they were sort of one thing, whatever that one thing was, people really were passionate about that. And I think it was a way to shake it up and say, we're not going to do a rock musical. We're going to do a rock musical that also happens to have a country western and a calypso number uh-huh. in it. And so people go, that's not going to work. But it does. And you don't sit there in the show and ever go, oh, why does this song happen here? It just makes sense. Because, again, there's also no dialogue. So you're sitting in the park for about a little over an hour and a half, and in that time you've seen, you know, 25 songs that are all completely different.
Yeah, sort of opera style,
yeah,
I suppose.
Absolutely. Yeah. Opera style. Absolutely.
Best way to describe it, I suppose. Now, a big cast on stage, but just mm-hmm. hitting some of the highlights. Do you want to mention some of the other performers, those who play the father or the brothers?
Sure. Emily Coffin and... now I can't remember. Now I'm going to miss a person's name.
No, go to a name.
Sure.
You can remember.
Emily Coffin and Lauren are playing our narrators. And let's see, who else is in there? Steve Warble is playing our Jacob. And we have lots of brothers. There's 11 brothers in the show. Some of them are students of mine. So Dylan Brindle and Drake Hahn and Joey Ferguson, who goes to Lee Summit High School. Mm-hmm. Kane Taylor, who's a teacher in the Lee Summit District, is one of the brothers. So, you know, a lot of very talented people in the production. So,
do you teach drama, Brad?
I do. I teach at Lee Summit West High School.
At Lee Summit West? Uh-huh.
And so this is my 7th year there, starting on Wednesday.
So, yeah. There are a lot of the students getting early extra credit for helping you
I'm
out?
Sure they will.
Yes. But you have such a big cast.
Yes. Well, and it's nice to work with them in a different way. You know, it's different to work with students during the year when I'm the teacher and they're the student. This is a much more sort of informal relationship because it's in the summer and there are a lot of adults around and involved in the production. So I think it's great for them to see both sides of the theater world.
Of course, all the schools do school productions, but getting out of that environment and doing something, even if it's a community theater production, gets them out of the environment of the school and the they're actually really doing something that they've been training in class to do.
Absolutely.
So this is always valuable, I think.
Well, I think it's also interesting for people in the community to see those actors outside of a high school production, to actually work with them, because I think so many times they see them on stage as high school kids, and then they put them on stage with them, and then suddenly there's a different kind of relationship there, and they can all learn from each other, which is so great.
Oh, sure. We will be with people who have many years of experience. They might even get to be on stage with people who have some professional
Absolutely.
Experience as well. And that's very invaluable. You know, how these people conduct themselves is probably a lot different from the way that they would have done a high school production, of course, as well. I assume you've been through college and all of that, done many things all those years?
No, I'm actually going into my first semester of college
really?
This fall, yes.
Well, who's lucky enough to have you in their show?
Yeah.
Which school?
I was homeschooled through high school, actually.
Well, college, where?
And where am I going to college? Oh, yes. I am going to Shorter University. It is in Rome, Georgia.
Yeah. So they'll be the lucky recipient of your talent on stage.
Yes. Yes, they will.
Yeah, why that particular school? Is that known for your kind of training?
Yeah, it has a really, really good musical theater program, which is what I was looking for, and I found it online, and then I went and visited, and I really like the program. It's a small school, so there's a lot of one-on-one opportunities there to learn a lot more. So that was one of the main reasons that I picked it.
Sure. Yeah, it sounds like you made a wise choice for yourself. It's nice that people can visit the campus. Sometimes they don't do that, especially if it's a far away
yeah.
school like that. And Georgia's quite a fur piece, as they say, away.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like you have a big group, and now is it difficult? Do you feel sometimes, some directors in the past have said that they feel like they're rustling cattle on stage at times?
Yeah. You know, we're really lucky. The people who we've gotten to work with, Ginger Birch is doing the music in the show, and she comes from a background in working with church musicians and things like that. So that definitely helps because she's used to working with big groups. Our shows at West, usually 50 people, so that's reasonable. I'm used to that. Phyllis Bologna from Stepping Out the Studio did all the choreography with Elise Ali. And that's awesome because they really have made it look like there's not 50 people on stage.
Okay.
They really do a great job of filling the space without making it look like we're just all running into each other. But it is. There's some nights where I think, I have no idea where anybody is. I'm just looking around for everybody. Because there's, you know, that whole idea of on stage and backstage. So I'm always like, is everyone in one of those two places?
Well, they should be in one or the other.
We're hoping. some days, yeah.
Said like a director usually says. Show opens this Friday the 12th at 8 o'clock p.m. Performances continue Saturday the 13th at 8. And closes then on Sunday the 14th at 8 o'clock p.m. at Legacy Park in the Outdoor Amphitheater. This, of course, adds a whole new set of problems. Outdoor theater. I imagine along the way you've done an outdoor show before. Probably mostly inside.
But. Yes. I mean, I've done maybe two outside shows in my whole career. And, yeah, it's interesting to go outside and be in a park where there's nothing. Like, you bring it all in yourself. That has been really the most intriguing part of the whole thing is that it's a brand new amphitheater, so it just opened in May, and so we're really the first people to do theater there. They've done some concerts and had some movies, but you know, there's a unique set of problems that come with doing a musical someplace because the lighting and the sound and the props and the set are all so different than it would be for any sort of other kind of performance piece. So, yeah, I think they're learning a lot and we're learning a lot. And it is. It's going to be really, truly an amazing night of theater. I think it's a very immersive show, but it is still right now trying to get everything done prior to our Friday opening.
Sure.
We're a little frantic.
Technically, it's probably a little more difficult.
Absolutely.
If you don't have control of all the elements, as we sit here and talk, there's a siren coming down Main Street, and that could happen on stage.
The
and
plane flew over the other day. That's interesting.
Sure. Tell us where Legacy Park is, for those who don't know.
So Legacy Park is on the east side of Lee Summit. I'm trying to think where Blackwell is the street that it's on.
Yeah, what's a good connecting? Say they're coming down 291. What would be the best way to go from there?
If I was coming down 291, I'd take the exit at Douglas.
Okay.
And I'd go from Douglas to...
South on Douglas?
I'd go south on Douglas, yes, to... Tudor,
okay.
And I'd turn left on Tudor, and I'd take Tudor all the way out. It goes straight out into the park.
Okay.
And when you get to the park, there'll be a sign that says Legacy Park Community Center. The community center is right next door to the amphitheater. So if you get to the community center, you just go right past it, and you'll see this big, giant amphitheater outside.
Do they have maps on the website?
I believe
Summit Theater
do.
Website? That would be Summit Theater, S-U-M-M-I-T, THEATRE.org, and that's probably the best place to go. I see here that tickets can be obtained online,
yes,
or at the Hy-Vee stores in Lee Summit.
Absolutely.
At the customer service account.
Yeah.
So you can go there and ask for all of that. The I guess the address of the new Legacy Park Amphitheater is 897 Northeast Blue Stem Drive. And the zip code, if you need to MapQuest things, and this is very important, you can MapQuest if you have the zip code. So listen up. The zip code is 64086 to find your way to Legacy Park. I guess performances start at 8 o'clock each night. Is it always dark enough at 8 o'clock these days? not yet?
Not really. No. But it still works.
So all the really colorful stuff happens after it gets dark, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
All the good stuff seems to happen just as it gets dark. Right? Like crossing our fingers, like, is this going to work?
Well, that's good timing, of course. Dance numbers in the show for you?
Not as much for me. I'm in one really, really short dance number, but there's lots of other dancing throughout the show. Yeah, I don't do a lot of dancing myself, though.
Sure, I've asked you about some of your castmates.
Yes.
I did, okay. Do we want to mention any of the names, of course? We don't want to. You're not the only person in the show. We just want
to. Yeah, no, okay, yeah. So, well, the brothers do a lot of dancing. So, yeah, that's 11 people there. And they do a lot of dancing with the wives as
uh-huh.
well. And then we have a children's chorus. I think they do some dancing. Our ensemble does some dancing. There's several dance numbers, but I'm not really in most of them.
No, okay.
Yeah.
Suddenly gets
you don't
to be
have
in
to
jail.
Be.
He does. Yeah. He gets seems to get out of all of the dance numbers.
Yeah.
He's dead during one of them.
Well, I seem to manage to get out of those dance numbers. It's called choreography hell. Some of the past guests talk about that, especially for the chorus. Is it really that bad?
No, you know it's not. I will say to you, we are very blessed. The people who do the choreography from Stepping Out the Studio, they just make it look effortless. With the big dance number in Act 1, besides Go, 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 Joseph, obviously, is One More Angel in Heaven, which is a country western number. And it can be, I think, really taxing looking,
mm-hmm.
just because the country western dancer doesn't necessarily always flow that beautifully. But it just looks like the best time. Like, I'm not in the show, obviously, but I feel like I'm having a great time watching it do it. It's amazing like that. Just,
well, if the director is entertained, it must be pretty good.
That's right. If I'm still having a good time, I'm not
if the director is frantic and he's covering his face, maybe not so much. Although sometimes looks can be deceiving.
Right.
You know? Sometimes the directors worry beyond their need to be worried, of course.
Right.
Yeah. Is an outdoor show more difficult than an indoor show? I sort of asked that before.
Absolutely. There was no way to foresee everything that was going to happen. And now as it's happening in the week of the show, it's like, oh, well, that's new. That was so unexpected. I mean, we're very lucky is that we started really ahead of the game with this show. So we came in with a lot of stuff already ready. But just the simple fact of, like, where did the costumes go at night? So 60 people in a show, and each of them have at least two costumes. So now we're talking about 200-plus pieces of clothing. And now where does it go? There's no storage anywhere.
I know. It has to go home with somebody.
Right. So we're very lucky. We have a great guy named Tom Engel who has brought us a huge trailer in. So all the costumes, he built racks inside of it and storage stuff. And so every night it all goes and sits in this giant trailer, and the next day we come back out.
I know what people are thinking. It's been oppressively hot. It's going to be a little cooler for you, thank goodness.
Yes.
What about the rain? Is there a rain-out policy or anything
like
that?
Yeah, so our rain-out policy is basically we're going to do the show. That's our goal. So if it's raining when the show starts, we'll still go ahead and try to wait it out and start the show. If we get through the first act of the show, then if it were to rain at that point, what we're going to do is give people the opportunity to come back the next night and see the second part of the show.
Oh, sure.
Or if it rains out completely and we can't do the production, then we are going to give people tickets to our next production.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, just push it back later at night. Like a midnight curtain.
Right. Friday, Saturday, sure. Sunday, so let's go back to work.
It'd be a lot of fun. Anna, have you heard the story of Carol Burnett on the stage of Starlight? Have you ever heard her tell that story?
I don't think I have.
I forget which show it was, but she was playing Starlight Theater many years ago. Mm-hmm. Took a deep breath to belt out that final note and a moth went in.
Oh, yeah, no, there are bugs on stage, and that is not fun, especially when it gets dark and then all the lights come on. So there's just a bunch of light in one place, which, you know, is pretty much bug heaven. So you're up there. And, yeah, I have been afraid of swallowing some bugs while I'm trying to sing because they're flying all around there. So.
Well, apparently she survived, but it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
But these are the things. But it adds to the fun and the intrigue. You never know what's going to happen.
Right.
If you go and you see Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat opening this Friday night, a production of the Summit Theater of Lee Summit. It'll be at the Legacy Park Outdoor Amphitheater, 897 East Blue Stem Drive, Lee Summit, Missouri. If you MapQuest again, the zip code is 64086. Their website, summittheater.org, or go to your local Hy-Vee store in Lee Summit, of course, to the customer service. There's two locations in Lee Summit. And go to the customer service counter there and ask about tickets for Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And it will be amazing.
It will be. And it's going to be beautiful this weekend to come out to the park and see the show. It's not going to be hot at all.
Oh, people are encouraged to bring picnic baskets and stuff, or you will be selling
outside food. We do. Everyone can bring water, like water bottles, things like that. They will sell concessions as well there, so you're welcome to do that. But bring a chair, bring a blanket, come sit out on the lawn and enjoy the production. We're going to have a great time.
SummitTheater.org for this and more information probably online about the show. I want to thank you both being with us as well. Brad Rackers is the director of the show, and Blaze Phillips plays the key role of Joseph in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, about to go on stage this Friday night, the 12th at 8 o'clock p.m., Saturday the 13th at 8 o'clock p.m., and Sunday the 14th also at 8 o'clock p.m. When it's an outdoor show, you really can't do an afternoon matinee.
No.
It would be a little different.
Yeah.
Coming up this week, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Legacy Park Outdoor Amphitheater. Lots of shows out. More and more shows are going outside these days. I guess it's more of a challenge and it's more fun, I guess.
Yeah.
And people like to come and sit and watch the shows as well outside. Thanks so much, both of you, for being with us. The best of luck to the show as well. The Jazz Insider, Sam Wiseman, is with us. He's going to bring you some great jazz music this afternoon. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. Then we'll turn it over to Lady D, and we'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.